What's up, internet? You're tuned in episode 95 of Nintendo Noise, Slipscreen Games' weekly Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Pete Mbessie, joined as always by my partner in Nintendo-related crimes, Mr. Stephen Radford.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Steve. And joining us today for the first time on the show, a very special guest, my oldest friend in podcasting, Mr. Kenneth Hicks.
Yo, what it do, y'all?
Glad to be here. Welcome to the show, man. Long time coming. Glad to finally have you on.
This is like a reunion, long time coming, right? The first podcast I ever did was with you and Jack back in college.
Yeah.
Game Coop. That was good times. Good times.
Way, way longer in the past than I would like to admit, if I'm honest. But it's been a long time. You and I have been friends and collaborators for a long, long time. And I've wanted to get you on one of these shows for a minute. So I'm glad we could finally get you over here on Nintendo Noise on such a storied week, because there is a brand new Game Boy Color game courtesy of the folks over at McDonald's. Steve, give us the skinny here. You broke this news to me yesterday, and I gotta say, I was very excited.
So apparently, it's some purple thing's birthday called Grimace. I have no idea who this is. You're gonna have to give me the lowdown.
Does Grimace
on
not
that.
Exist in the UK? Is that our new thing we're learning this week?
Not as far as I'm aware. Like, I don't think we even had the hamburger. We just had the Goofy Clown.
You know,
we just have Ronald.
Well, yeah. this is Ronald McDonald's very good friend Grimace. I don't know what he is. He's a big purple Muppet. I don't know.
Yeah, he's some purple blob. And apparently they turned him into a milkshake as well, because there's a purple milkshake that they're doing. But anyway, to celebrate his birthday, they not only released a limited edition Happy Meal on June 12th was his birthday, but they uploaded to this random website, grimacesbirthday.com, and they commissioned Cruel Toys, which, by the way, is the coolest looking website. They have like the Yahoo Kids font as their logo.
It's pretty good. It's really sending me back, that's for sure.
But everything about this website I love. Have you seen this man hamburger on the left? And they've got like this pole. It's like, yes, I have. I'm not telling. Of course I've selected the I'm not telling. And like the ringtones, the hottest ringtones advert. I just want to click through to all of it. It's really 90s. I love it. But there's this random Game Boy game you can play in the... you can play it on the website. It was built in GB Studio and commissioned by Cruel Toys. And it's really, really cool. It's the latest new Game Boy Color game in 2023.
I've heard this works on native software or hardware too.
It
right?
does.
You can play it on a real Game Boy if you want.
Yeah, it does.
So if you're able to get on your Game Boy, you can do a Tony Hawk's Pro Grimace, right?
No.
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, yeah. Okay, you did. So you have played it.
I was listening to what Kev was saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I had you muted on my end by accident there, Kev. I'm sorry. I opened up Grimace's birthday on my browser here so the kids can see, and I think it muted everybody. I apologize. It muted you. Okay, hold on. I gotta close grimacesbirthday.com, everybody. It's messing it up. It's messing up the whole show. Okay. If you guys want to go check out grimacesbirthday.com, you gotta do it on your own time. I can't show you.
This was developed by someone called Grumpy Function. His real name is Tom Lockwood. And he's been a real big player in the Game Boy homebrew space. He made a game called Unearthed a couple of years ago, won the 2021 Game Boy Color Game Jam. And I guess he got commissioned by McDonald's to make this to celebrate Grimace's birthday. It's a really, really cool little game. It's like a side-scrolling skateboard game, and you just use A and B, but you can do like kick flips and stuff, and Grimace, this like purple blob, just goes along and he has to pick up like McDonald's shakes and food and things along the way.
What an athlete, right? Like, I mean, yeah. Grimace is large. The fact that he's doing some sick air tricks like that is pretty impressive, I gotta say.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, what game they released years ago? The McDonald's game they released years ago. I guess it's trying to rekindle that flame.
Or like the Burger King games from like back in the day. What was it?
Yeah,
like Sneak King and things like that.
Sneak King was unrivaled. That game was so ridiculous.
Oh man, but hearing the McDonald's I'm loving it tune in 8-bit was just wonderful. Truly wonderful.
They don't even do that anymore, do they? Is that still their tagline?
I don't know, but maybe I think it is, but I guess the idea behind this is it's meant to be from the 90s or early 2000s, because everything on the website is old, looks really old. Celebrate your birthday at McDonald's. and go see the Hamburglar and have a purple milkshake. It's very weird, very strange, very niche thing to put out.
They're cashing in on the 90s nostalgia, right? It's time.
Yeah. Did you also see the random handheld they released as well this week in Japan?
The Chicken McNugget Tetris thing?
Yeah, the boot shape one. The best shape nugget, the boot. You can really scoop that in there and get the barbecue sauce on there. But like an official Tetris game in the shape of a chicken nugget.
Like, what do I got to do to get that thing in the States? Like, can I import this?
I think so. I watched Taki Udon's video on it, and he was giving one away. So maybe enter his competition, and he might send you a chicken nugget.
You too could win a chicken nugget.
Yeah, very weird things to do, but I'm 100% on board. I love this kind of marketing, and I think it's just really fun. You can download the ROM as well. It's been uploaded to archive.org by someone, presumably the developer. So if you do want to play it in an emulator or on like a, I guess you could play it on actual hardware if you've got a cart writer, or
I need one of those on an analog, or one of the hot socket carts, you know, yeah, where you can just like drop the files on it. Yeah, because here's the thing. Could I boot this up on my Steam Deck? Will I boot this up on my Steam Deck? I'm sure I will. But, like, I want to play it on the Game Boy, right? You got to get it on the cart.
You see, they need to double down on this promotion. They need to have, like, a contest giveaway where they, like, make limited edition carts. Like, that would be so rad.
I would be so in on that.
Like they just need to, like, double down on this.
I want it to be, like, the transparent ones. You know, remember the official Game Boy Color ones? And they were only that transparent plastic that it just looks so cool.
And I'd really want it to be in that. Instead of like the logo going inward, it like puffed out and you're like, oh, that's where the extra, that's where the color goes. You know, that's where they put that extra chip.
I only had like two of those. I had a lot of the black cartridges, which worked in both, but I only had like two official Game Boy Color games.
The only game
of them was Tomb Raider. The game I don't remember what the other one was.
Comes to mind when I think of that cart is the Super Mario Brothers Deluxe cart. That one was that. And that was such a sick game.
I think I have that cart somewhere around here. I got to find it. I have so many old Game Boy Color games that I'm sure I got to find them.
I got my whole bag of them is over to the left here, and I've dug it out on this podcast enough that you can just take my word for it, everybody. Okay? I got my Super Mario Brothers Deluxe. Don't you worry. But yeah, you know, I got to say, I love to see the Game Boy get some love. You know, I'm a McDonald's kid, so this is definitely I'm a mark for this one. I'll tell you what, though, I was a little unnerved. I happened to go to a McDonald's recently. I was driving down to New Jersey to visit my father, and was like, you know, let me get a little McNugget action on the way down there. And I see this Grimace birthday combo. They don't tell you what flavor the Grimace shake is. It's just the Grimace.
It's made of Grimace. Yeah,
and I'm like, I don't know if I'm a fan of that. Is this his blood? Like, what's going on here?
Yo, so the reason he can skateboard despite being the way he is because he just, you know, inhibits Grimace. If you want to be like Grimace, you got to drink the Grimace. You got to be one with the Grimace. savor the Grimace.
So you're telling me if I drink Grimace's blood in this black magic ritual that McDonald's is offering me via combo platter, that I too could skateboard like Grimace?
I didn't say that. McDonald's said that.
That's what it's implying.
Presumed rather than his blood, it was like, you know, when you give the Pokemon back to the professor and you get candy in return, and presumably they've like blended up the Pokemon to turn into the candy. Like, I presume that's what they're doing. Fine
powder. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he just goes in with some ice cream and becomes a Grimace milkshake.
Or is it possible that through all the skateboarding, right? You're taking a lot of spills, right? He's bleeding, and they're like, oh, it's, you know, we got to make good use of this. We got to get
someone's following him around after with a mop and like soaking it all up.
Could be. I wouldn't put it past McDonald's to figure out how to wring some blood from that Grimace, as it were.
So you know the process on how McDonald's make their chicken nuggets? Just that, but with Grimace. That's the shake.
Yeah. I guess, you know? Or it's like, I can't remember what I feel like this is a Simpsons bit or something where it's like a cow thing where you can like pull burger out of the cow but not kill the cow. And it's like that, but with you're just constantly taking chunks out of Grimace's back meat so that you can make these shakes.
That's horrific. Is that like the Lisa Goes Vegan episode or something to make it like really hammer the fact home?
Maybe. Yeah, something like that. I don't know. Let me know in the comments below which fucked up cartoon I'm thinking of that did this.
I feel like this conversation made a hard right turn towards the end there.
Yeah, you know, we went to some weird places, but you know what? That's what we do here, Ken. And while we're here in the preamble of the show, before we get into the main topic, where we're going to talk all about a couple things. We're going to talk a little bit about Summer Game Fest and whether it's time for Nintendo to get in line and get behind on the G3 wave. And then we got some questions from y'all on the question block that we're excited to jump into. But before that, Steve wanted to ask Ken a couple questions about his personal Nintendo history to get y'all acquainted with our good friend Ken here.
Yeah, so like, I really want to know, I think, three main questions. One, what's your favorite Nintendo franchise? Two, your favorite Nintendo console or the first Nintendo console you got? And three, like a really hot take of a game that you hate or a franchise that you hate that everyone else is really into. I'll give you an example. No. Mine, I think Ocarina of Time sucks. But everyone else keeps telling me that I need to play and I've got to get into it and it's really great. And
so full
blah, blah,
of shit.
Blah.
He doesn't even think that. Like, the thing is, Ken, he says these things when there's video evidence to prove that what he's saying is nonsense. He got to Jabu Jabu, right? Which I think most people would acknowledge. Annoying. Right, an annoying part of the game, and he just turned on it like a fucking dime. You know, it's like up until then he's having fun. I got hours of footage of you enjoying Ocarina of Time, and then you're gonna
only because I was playing it with friends.
I think it sucks. Okay,
I feel like if I had to do it on my own, I would have not enjoyed it. You know, go to this place, get this bottle of milk or something, and then go do this and do that. And I'm just like, oh,
it hasn't aged as well as a lot of people think. It's still a masterpiece. It still set a lot of precedents. But there's no shame in saying that certain aspects of it have just been done better over the years. But like, that's true with a ton of N64 games, to be fair. You know what I mean?
The nature of video games too, right? Being so iterative, right? Is a lot of time,
yeah.
You know, you're always getting a new version of the idea, right? So,
I couldn't go back to Mario 64 when we had that the 3D All-Stars collection because the camera was just nailing me every time. I was just like, I hate the way this camera controls. And you go and play like Sunshine or Galaxy in there and it's glorious.
I just don't know why they refuse to just re-release that game with a camera that's functional. I think I think the game has aged pretty fine. It's just the camera. It's like absolute dog water.
Yeah. Listen, Cook on Super Mario Odyssey 2, and you know, keep it moving. But yeah, to kind of answer your three questions, one, first Nintendo console was the Super NES, and I've had every Nintendo console from then until now except the Wii U. my roommate at the time had a Wii U, and they had the two games I wanted to play, so it was like whatever.
What right? were those two games?
Smash Brothers and Splatoon.
Okay. Yeah, like, good choices.
And like, you know, Bayonetta 2, but I'd never played Bayonetta 1, so I just and then I eventually got that on the Switch, but I digress. And my favorite Nintendo franchise is Pokemon. I collect Pokemon cards, I play all the video games, I got the Pokemon Bulbasaur tattoo. I'm all about that Poke life, you know what I mean? So that
man
would
after my own heart.
Peter's my Pokemon rival. Like, we go back and forth. We still need to have our battle in Scarlet and Violet.
Yeah, we gotta rekindle it. Because back in the day when, like Ken said at the top, we went to college together, and there was a point where we both worked for the radio station, and every single week we would have a battle at the same time on the same day every week and bring a new team and try to, you know, work on what we were bringing to the table every week.
Yeah, no, like those the glory days, man, takes me back. what was the second question?
It was the first question was your favorite franchise. You said that one. Then it was first or favorite piece of a console. So you got that one. So then it would be, I guess, just for your hot take.
Oh, so hot take. This isn't a franchise that I hate, but it is a franchise that I have a back and forth relationship with. I have never beat a Legend of Zelda game. I always get halfway through and I stop. I had the Ocarina of Time on the N64, loved it, played the heck out of it, got a little bit past the Adult Link stage, stopped playing. Got Wind Waker, loved it. Got about halfway through, stopped it. Twilight Princess, got halfway through, stopped it. Even Breath of the Wild, got probably spent more time in that game than any other Zelda game. Probably put like 20, 30 hours into it, never beat it. I haven't even started Tears of the Kingdom. And I
think, honestly, I think it's okay. My thing is, and Pete always okay. rags on me about it, is you if you finish, if you get to a certain point in the game and the game starts being fun, when you're not having, you've like got your kind of go of it, just walk away.
Listen.
But Pete's all like, you never finish any games. Don't come at me. Because
you don't. And you're a goddamn monster, all right? I'm not sitting here saying you got to finish every game you play, but I don't know. Maybe let me ask you this question, Ken. Do you think it's reasonable that somebody maybe finishes their game of the year? You know, like, I don't know. Like, is that a controversial opinion that maybe you roll credits on what was supposed to be one of your favorite games of all time? I don't know, Steve. You know, I'm just out here asking the important questions.
Well, I would never call Zelda my favorite game of the year, but I hear what you're saying.
No, I'm throwing it at Steve on that one. You know, look, if you not finishing Breath of the Wild, it's baffling to me. I don't understand why a person would bounce off that game, but also
I'll tell you exactly why I bounced off that game. Persona 5.
See, that's reasonable. That's reasonable.
Did you finish Persona?
Oh yeah, I got the plat too.
Okay, so that's fine then.
Yeah, Ken finishes games. He just hasn't finished Zelda. Persona.
Never ever finished Persona. This guy,
he not only did he not finish Persona, he almost finished it. Then he committed to doing a game club where we would replay it, and then he bailed after the first ballot. He's a monster, Ken. A monster.
Wait, now it's on Nintendo Switch, so I can ask you. How far did you get until you dropped Persona 5?
I got past Futaba's Palace. I did one after that. I don't remember what that one was.
So yeah, you got pretty close, like last like three or so.
He was so far in the original. Like that's almost the end.
like to be fair,
like almost the end in that game is still like 30 more hours, but still.
Yeah, Persona's a whole lifestyle. That's a whole lifestyle.
Plus, it was the original Persona without any of the like royal enhancements and like nice quality of life improvements. I was leaving my PlayStation 4 just on constantly in order to play that game because you couldn't save it in any place you wanted. You like, had to save it at specific points and specific places, and it was just a pain in the ass. So I never ended up finishing it.
No, fair enough.
Before smart TVs, so I was like, look, I got to watch Netflix. You know, come on. Like, you tell me I got to play 3 more hours of this game before they'll let me save. Like, what's going on here?
Oh, so like I was insufferable because when I played Persona 5 for the first time, my TV was in the living room, so I made all of my roommates watch me play Persona 5 on my days off. At first, they kind of liked the music. By the end of it, they hated me.
I love the music. I have the music on vinyl. Like, I really love that game in the same way that I really loved Elden Ring and Peace. That's my game of the year last year, that Peace Fair into, and I never finished it. And I think I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that.
I feel like games like Elden Ring, and to even a certain extent, the recent Zelda games like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, it's just so easy to get lost in everything else. Like, you can beat the game in 30 hours, or you can spend 100 hours just goofing around.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it's understandable if you don't beat it, but at some point, it's like, okay, I got to put a pin in this.
I think the most notorious game I have a relationship like that with is Skyrim, which I put like 80 hours into and never finished. And like, not because I was like not liking it. I was just like, I moved on to some other game and was like, yeah, I got my fill. Like, I did all the side stuff I wanted to do. Whatever. Like, Skyrim's not, you know, I never finished the Civil War. Oh, well, you know, well, that's okay.
Honestly, that's like the most, that's one of the least interesting storylines in that game, I think. Like, I love some of the side quests and stuff in those games. I always think they're so fun. Even back in Oblivion, like, I always remember the woman that had like rats in her basement, but they were her pets and something was coming to eat them. And she like is so over the top with the voice acting. It's just hilarious.
So thanks for sharing, Ken. Thanks for letting us get to, you know a little bit more about you here. You know, it's funny because you said you were coming at me with a hot take with Zelda today, and I thought you were going to be like, Tears of the Kingdom is trash, and I was ready to yell at you, but you're like, I haven't started it yet. It's like, oh, it's okay, buddy. That's not so bad.
it's crazy because I bought the game and then immediately lent it to my friend and haven't even touched it.
Okay, that's insanity. Like, no way. I mean, granted, Pete buys games and keeps them sealed for 3 years and won't play them, even though he promises me that he will. So it's okay.
We're doing this again, Steve. How many games have you promised me you were going to play? All right, this man lost a bet to me.
At least
Ken,
I booted
him
up.
He was supposed to play Mass Effect as the losing of the bet. That was what we agreed upon. And he played the first 5 hours of it and then gave up. He promised me he was going to play Life is Strange. Instead, he plays a different game made by the same developer. And then it's like, I'll wait for the remaster. And then the remaster comes out and he doesn't play it.
What game did I play? Tell me why. It's Pride Month. You know, you got to celebrate the queer people.
Oh, yeah, you're right. There's no queer people in Life is Strange. Oh, I'm sorry. You would know that if you had played the game, Steve. You son of a bitch. Oh, my God. All right. Well, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. I got Ken here to back me up and keep me sane this week. So we're going to move on into the next segment.
Yo,
right?
When you get a minute, it's a 8 hour game. Life is Strange. It's a fun little ditty to play in between at your leisure.
I plan on it. I do.
It's
plan
a good
on
time.
It.
Oh, he plans on it. He says, okay. I plan on playing Hitman 2, Steve, one of these days. You know, one of these days, the shrink wrap will come off.
The really sad thing is I know you would love that game. And, like, we talk so much about it. And you were, like, constantly, well, I really fancy just doing something like this. And I'm like, just fucking play Hitman. You're like, I really want a new immersive sim. And I'm just like, will you boot Hitman up, please? Seriously.
Oh, yeah. I should have played it when Redfall sucked. You know, that I should have been like, oh, yeah, let me jump into it now. You know, there we go. Anyway, so like I said, we're going to get into some conversation about Nintendo and Summer Game Fest in just a minute here. But before that, let me remind you that this episode of Nintendo Noise is brought to you by our Patreon producers for the month of June. They're, of course, Arnold J. Rimmer, Christopher Valenz, Earth Visitor, Gabriel Hassemeyer, a.k.a. Asobi, Snackygo, Ty the Dude, and Waka Hula. Thank you all so much for your support over on patreon.com/flipscreengames. You're all the realest of the real, and we greatly appreciate your support of this and all of our sister shows. Speaking of Summer Game Fest, our Summer Game Fest coverage has concluded for now. Of course, there's the Annapurna Direct coming later this month. We'll be back to talk about that. But we just posted our last episode for everything from the first week of Summer Game Fest that we didn't cover live. So, of course, if you want to go watch our live reactions of both Summer Game Fest Showcase and the Xbox Xbox Game Showcase plus Starfield Direct. We watched both of those live. We did an extra podcast after each of them, breaking down every announcement. And then just yesterday, as of the time of this recording, we dropped our final episode where we got into all of the announcements we were most excited about from every other showcase. So that's Day of the Devs. That's Capcom. That's UbiForward. That's PC Gaming Show. That's the Xbox Showcase Extended. That's probably a sixth one that I can't remember. There's a bunch of stuff.
And Day of the Devs.
Did I say Day of the Devs? I thought I started at Day of the Devs.
Well, we got Wholesome Direct.
Wholesome Direct. That one I didn't say. There you go. Lots of good stuff. So if you want to hear our thoughts on upwards of, like, I don't even know, it was like 30, 40 games we talked about across all those presentations, go check it out. Bunch of great extra content for you in your feed this week over on the Flip Screen Games podcast feed. However you get involved, go and check it out. We thank you for tuning into this week's show. And of course, if you want to get involved and write in just like everyone did for the question block on this week's segment, remember, flipscreen.games. That's a website where you will find our email address, our Discord, where you can keep the conversation rolling between episodes, and links to a bunch of other places you can find us all across the web. All right, that's enough shilling for now. Let's get into the Summer Games Fest conversation yet again, because in that episode, Steve, right, we talked about kind of how this year's Summer Game Fest overall shaped up to the last few that we've gotten, and how kind of generally, I think this was the best it's felt so far. This was the most Summer Game Fest felt like a proper, I think, replacement for E3, you know, and not to say that there's not room for improvement, not to say that there's not, you know, adjustments to be made to the scheduling and the programming. Sure. But I think this was where it kind of found its groove. And I think the identity of the product is becoming more and more clear. That said, there's still one major holdout. Sure, PlayStation Showcase happened a week early, but they showed up to Jeff's opening event, right? We got the Spider-Man 2 date there. There was at least a showing from PlayStation, but Nintendo is the only of the three major platform holders that is a absolute no-show at Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest for the entire history of the event, right? What's up? Is this the year where they finally, and I guess what I mean to say is next year, 2024, is this the year where we finally see Nintendo get in line and recognize that E3's done and Summer Game Fest is the wave?
I actually think the time will tell will be at the Game Awards. They've been missing for the last couple of years there as well. It's really since Reggie stepped down that they kind of severed ties with Jeff, it feels like. They've not really had a presence at the Game Awards. They've not had a presence at Summer Game Fest, as you said. And I think if we're going to see it, we'll probably see some kind of announcement from them at the Game Awards this year. And then maybe that carries over to next year. That's if they've got anything big to announce this December. Even if it's Metroid something Prime small, 4. Though. It would be nice if it was Metroid Prime 4. I could actually see them showing something off like that there. I mean, they showed off Bayonetta there before. That was where they announced that. It's kind of a more mature audience. I think it could work there. I think they revealed the Joker for Smash Brothers there as well.
Yeah.
So they could do something like that. Even if it's just a small announcement, though, I feel like even just the next DLC for a game or something, just bring something to the table and show that you're kind of on board would be good.
Yeah, so like this is my opinion here, right? The Summer Game Fest benefit greatly from a bigger Nintendo presence, but Nintendo doesn't need Summer Game Fest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were the first ones to really break away from the E3 circuit, if you will, with the Nintendo Directs. And I feel like they kind of literally set the stage for everything that's going on right now with Summer Game Fest, with the Sony Directs or State of Play. They were the pioneers. Nintendo always marches to the beat of their own drum. And they're going to set up their marketing videos, their marketing announcements based on what's best for them. They're never going to circle their announcements around this arbitrary big summer event. Like, they're going to announce what they want when they want. We're not going to get a Nintendo Direct for a little bit. They just soft dropped a trailer for Pikmin 4 online. Now that Zelda's out and that whole big push is pretty much done as far as marketing, in my opinion. I think that Nintendo's going to be pretty hush-hush with a handful of exceptions. Because aside from Pikmin 4, what else does Nintendo have coming out this year? I feel like I'm...
DLC
for Pokemon, and then there's the last DLC. And then Mario Kart, yeah.
Basically...
And they've also got Everybody 1-2 Switch, which they silently put on the store. And I would imagine we'll probably see something else that's smaller from them. I could see an indie title, similar to... Good Job or Snipperclips, something like that. I could see them publishing something like that. But you're right. We spoke last week about how they basically had their own, they had enough content there for a direct, for a mini direct, especially if you'd included some of the announcements that were made at Summer Game Fest. But I could have easily seen them revealing Prince of Persia, for example. That would have been a great one to have.
Oh, it's that coming game looks to so Switch. Good.
So, yeah, and it's coming to Switch. That would have been a great one to have at a Nintendo Direct and reveal and show. And it's good support from a third party. Bring that over and show that you've still got games coming in 2024 to the Switch. There's still a reason to go out there and buy it. Because I think at the moment, people are just... sales are obviously declining. People are slowing down. And there's not much coming out, as you said. We've got Pikmin 4. We don't know what else is there. And I think it's pretty clear the writing seems to be on the wall that another console's coming, but it would be nice.
But it's so interesting because, you say the thing about sales, it's have they still though, right? Because it's whatever lull that there naturally was earlier in the year, Tears of the Kingdom, kind of gave that another shot in the arm, right?
A ton of people just bought the OLED Switch.
Incredibly.
Yeah, a lot of people bought that Switch.
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to see a bunch more of those special edition consoles. That's what they did with the 2DS when they needed to use up the parts. It was just like, here, have one with a Pikachu face on this. Have a Pokeball one. This is great. So I could easily see us having more and more of those. The same with the Joy-Cons. But I would like to see them get on board with Summer Game Fest. I know, I think I agree with you that they don't need it. But it is a nice place to be around the whole of the kind of gaming community. It's all eyes on gaming for a week or 2 weeks. And you can have those cohesions between events where they reveal Prince of Persia at the Nintendo Direct, and then Ubisoft can show more and have like a bit of a walkthrough. Or maybe they do the Nintendo Treehouse at Summer Game Fest, and they have Jeff there and they talk about it, and they can kind of go a little bit more in depth in some games. Like, it would have been great to see more about Pikmin this week and have like a bit of a Nintendo Treehouse on it and have them talk through it. And we could have had that following a Nintendo Direct at Summer Game Fest. And it could have been there as part of the play days. So we could have seen what journalists thought of it.
I think that's the bigger thing. Because I definitely agree with what Ken's saying in regards to Nintendo certainly doesn't need anyone to set marketing beats, right? Like, you know, you made the point that like Nintendo kind of set the standard with the Nintendo Direct. They also are the only ones that have really cultivated that to mean something in the way that it does, right? Like, you know, State of Play, right? Like, not to say that there's never been good ones, but State of Play does not elicit the same reaction as Nintendo Direct, right? Even looking at, you know, some of the competitors in the space, right? Like the Wholesome Direct, that apes the Nintendo Direct branding. The Starfield Direct, that apes that branding, right? You say direct, people know what that means, and that's because of Nintendo, right? So I'm with you that they don't necessarily need, they don't need the boost of a Summer Games Fest in the same way that some of the other players do. But I think you can make that same argument about Xbox, right? Or PlayStation or whatever. Like, maybe not in the same way as a Nintendo Direct, right? But like, PlayStation and Xbox's big summer showcases, regardless of the fact that E3 is dead, there's expectation on those events. And all you need to do is look at the negative reaction to PlayStation's event to show what the expectations for it were versus what they failed to deliver. So like, I'm with you in that regard. But I think the point that Steve just made about the days of play is something where Nintendo does get a ton of value. Because if they had been at Days of Play this year, we could have had Pikmin impressions out now, a couple weeks ahead of its, you know, release, and people would be getting hyped for it rather than we're all still playing Tears of the Kingdom. Well, yeah, Pikmin's coming, but who's thinking about it right now? Who's champing at the bit for it? And I love
Ken is because he hasn't started Tears of the Kingdom.
I'm not even going to start that game until after Final Fantasy 16. But I digress, right? But like, you know, counterpoint here, I guess you could say devil's advocate. Would you say that maybe from Nintendo's point of view, them releasing gameplay trailers or a big announcement during the Summer Game Fest might be drowned out when surrounded by all of their other announcements?
Maybe I think that's how they feel. Yeah,
I really don't want to be on that wave.
But I think when they have big enough news, I think they will. Because the last E3 they were at was where we saw Metroid Prime 4. It was where there was that big reveal and everyone was really excited about it. I could see next year.
You mean Dread?
No, it wasn't Dread, was it? It was Metroid Prime 4 when Reggie was there and I did like the big E3 reveal there. Or was Dread there? Were they there the year after that? I thought they'd only done one E3 before.
Hold on, I'm going to have to look this up because I got to be honest with you. I'm getting hazy on the details, but you go ahead.
But then I could easily see them next year being like, here's Super Mario Odyssey 2. And that being a big enough news story that it cuts through the rest of it, cuts through the noise.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, do they want to cut through the noise and be the biggest announcement out of a sea of announcements, or just be the announcement of that week?
But I think they can do that in the same way that PlayStation did, right? PlayStation had their event a week prior. They managed to have their kind of news cycle, but it was adjacent enough. Maybe Nintendo does it a week later. I mean, last year we saw the announcement of the OLED Switch, but it was just like silently dropped in a tweet. And I feel like that could have easily been a part of one of Jeff's announcements. It's like, oh, look, check out this really big announcement from Nintendo. There's a new fucking Switch. Like, this is what you've been waiting for. Here's this like really great looking screen and like Metroid Dread's on it.
So yeah, actually, just to, to give the historical context, their last appearance was at E3 2019, and that was where we got the first trailer for Breath of the Wild 2, which then became Tears of the Kingdom. That's obviously huge. We got Banjo-Kazooie revealed. We got a new trailer for Animal Crossing, New Horizons. That was, like, I think the first, like, full extended look at it.
And the year prior must have been Prime 4 then. Because I'm sure they announced that at E3.
No, they didn't. They initially announced it at the Switch event. Like, the Switch reveal event was the first time that they announced Metroid Prime. And that was obviously years prior to that. It would have been much earlier than 2018.
So I'm curious, though, right?
Oh, and Link's Awakening also got shown at that event.
That's a big one, then.
Yeah.
No, Banjo, that makes it thick. so I'm curious, though, because if you think about it, even though we get hype over the Summer Game Fest, it's technically just a giant marketing ad for all these different games, things to get us hyped up and excited about what's coming in the future. Totally. Do these, like, game developers and companies, like, pay to be on the ticket? Like how exactly does that?
Yes, they do, yeah.
They do.
Yeah, and we don't know the exact ins and outs of it, but it's definitely a lot cheaper than E3 was because there's no... there is the days of play. So, like, it's still not the same, right? Because Nintendo.
I don't think it's going to be anywhere near, like, the price of setting up a booth and being on a show floor.
Nintendo used to spend a gross amount of money making the actual, like, interactive, like, setups. Like, in 2019, they had the whole Animal Crossing Village and everything. And it's like, they spent millions of dollars on that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that had any influence on them joining or not. I digress.
It possibly could, but I feel like if they're doing their own event and Jeff just wants to shove it on his website, I don't think, say, Capcom's paying Jeff to include their event on Jeff's website.
Right?
Yeah. So I think that's fine, and I feel like maybe there's a freebie going on with PlayStation revealing, like, the date there. It's like a favor of, like, oh, well, we'd like you to use the kind of Summer Game Fest branding, but can we have then something in return to show at the event? You know, I think for the big players, that Jeff's probably not asking for anything from them because it kind of works in his favor. But for the smaller people, I think it probably goes the opposite direction because we found out some details. I can't remember when it was. Was it during the PlayStation lawsuit with they were, like, interjecting with the CMA, and we found out that they were charging to be part of State of Play. I can't remember where that news came out from.
I think that was remember? Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
And they were charging to be on the front of the store, and they were also charging to be part of these events, and they're charging all of these developers, and some of the smaller developers were talking about the fact that they were just completely shut out from them, that they could not afford it in any way.
So that's, like, that's the thing, right? Is, like, even... Yeah, I can't imagine that they would be held in that same, you know, they're not going to be shelling out to be a part of Summer Game Fest in the same way, because to your point, them providing a Nintendo Direct brings a ton of value to it, right? So I doubt that that's as much of a reason, but I would think that is the reason that we didn't see them this year, right? Because before E3, like, properly went belly up, there was that interview that came out with, I forget what his title was, but he was one of the guys at Reed Pop who was working to revive the show. And they were talking about, I think they specifically said that the reason Nintendo had said they weren't going to be a part of E3 this year was because they didn't have anything significant to show. And I think in that regard, it's like, well, yeah, are we going to spend the amount of marketing budget it takes to get a Nintendo Direct together? Because obviously that costs money, right? Like, they're taking time out of, you know, important people in the company's schedules to shoot the thing, let alone the production costs, all that stuff. But then also you're having to put that ask on your development teams to create vertical slices to be shown or trailers to be shown, right? And that takes away from development time, that costs money. And, you know, back in the day when everybody knew they were going to E3 every single year, that was part of your marketing budget, right? Like, you had the expectation you were going to spend those millions of dollars on E3. You had the expectation that you were going to spend a certain amount of time and resources putting all this material together. But the pandemic upended that, right? And, like, Nintendo has seen that they don't need to do that every year. So, like, to Steve's point, yeah, if you've got a trailer for Tears of the Kingdom several years before it's going to come out, yeah, show up and eat everybody's lunch and make the headlines and compete with everybody to be the big dog. But if you don't, What, are you going to show up and be embarrassed? Be like, hey, you want to see another trailer for Pikmin 4? No, that's a waste of money. It's a waste of resources. You know, why bother?
I think there's another factor here as well. Like with E3, they weren't going to be there. And I kind of feel like it's interesting because this was going to be the first fan event, right, managed by Repop. It was really going to be kind of what they do with EGX and with PAX and kind of making it, shifting E3 to be a full public event. They're going to be at Gamescom, and I know it's Nintendo of America versus Nintendo Europe, so there might be some differences there. But they've also got their Nintendo Live event in Seattle in September. So they are allowing people to come and do stuff, and they're going to have like similar activities that they would have had at an E3. But I don't think the expectation is there that there's going to be any announcements. It's just something you can come to, and it's like a fan day. So maybe they don't see the point. And I think, Pete, you made this point on Flipscreen Games Podcast, I think it was last week, that maybe PlayStation brings back PSX and they make that a thing. And we maybe, because Xbox just had their, it was their fan day or something.
I think is what fan they call fest, it. Xbox yeah. Fan Fest.
So Xbox has Fan Fest. Nintendo's doing Nintendo Live. I could easily see PSX coming back. Do you necessarily need these big shows for kind of gamers, for the public to be able to attend to? I don't necessarily think that you do, when they can do their own thing.
Yeah, I think there is the convenience factor, though, of there being consistency, right? Like having days of play and being like, okay, all of the like press and influencers of like big note are going to be in the same place at the same time to check out games, to go for the behind closed doors demos and all that stuff, and then go and report on it, talk about it on their podcast, talk about it on their YouTube channel, whatever. That is still something where I think having a unified event is valuable, because that does take some of the pressure off of a PlayStation or a Nintendo to set up an event where there's going to be kiosks and you're going to get people to fly out. And, you know, when's the last time, you know, how far away is that from Summer Game Fest? Are some people going to not come because they already spent money to travel, right? Like, it becomes this whole thing. And that was the big question with, oh, what's going to happen with E3 versus Summer Game Fest? Are people really going to fly out for two different weeks, a week apart? Or like, you know, and I don't think they would. I think people would have, some outlets anyway, would have had to pick and choose, or they would have had to send half a team here, half a team, you know, and it creates logistical problems where if you're just like, yeah, no, we're going to play nice, we'll show up to the event and we'll bring our game that we know is going to make headlines and impress people because we're confident that it's in that state and it's ready to be shown, then I could see them maybe being like, great, now's the time we want to come. But I wouldn't expect to see them every year by any stretch, you know, because like right now, I think Ken's right. Like, they're holding their cards to their chest because you got to imagine they're thinking about what comes next, right? And like, you want to save the next big trailer, the next Metroid Prime 4 trailer, that, you know, those kind of moments. I think you want to start maybe lining those up for your next console reveal, right?
Yeah, and that's going to happen sooner rather than later, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it's not going to be till next year. I don't think they're going to cannibalize the holiday sales with any kind of announcement this year.
No, Tears of the Kingdom out. You just let that ride.
Yeah. So I think we'll probably see that. I could easily see them doing like a early 2024 reveal. It's like, here's a bunch of new games. Here's a new console. This is what's coming. Like, get excited for Nintendo.
I could see them doing something somewhat similar to what they did with the Switch reveal, where like they have like another trailer or something like that at something like the Game Awards, and they have like a Doug Bowser or somebody come out and be like, and by the way, like, the rumors are true, you know, the NX is in development, we're gonna talk about it with you in a couple months. Like, I could see them doing something like that, where they're like, hey, we're not ready to talk about what's next, but we have a direct, we have an event coming January, we have an event coming in March, whatever, where we're going to reveal to you, you know, the future of Switch, right? Or the next hardware iteration, whatever. And I think that makes sense, you know, but also, I don't know, man, like, we've thought that the last 2 years too, right? Where it's like, surely we're getting
I'm going to call it now.
We must be coming up on it, and just never quite seems to be the case, huh? Like, it's, you know, it's like the thing keeps selling and the old games keep selling and the new games break new records. And I mean, the game of the year, I think pretty safely right now anyway, right? We'll see, mileage may vary after Final Fantasy and Starfield and some of these other heavy hitters come out. But I mean, Tears of the Kingdom is the game to beat right now. And it's out on 7-year-old, 6-year-old hardware, right? So how much do they really need a new console, or how much is it just nerds like us who want a new console?
So it's kind of at the point right now where at 6 years old, they kind of pushed the limits of the technology to the point that a lot of multi-platform games that are coming out now won't even run on the Switch properly without heavily downsizing certain graphical features and things of the sorts. Even when the Switch came out 6 years ago, it wasn't as strong as a PS4. It wasn't running like the latest technology in 2017. So it's not 6-year-old hardware. It's probably close to 8 or 9-year hardware. And now I've seen the gameplay. I haven't played the game myself, but I've seen the gameplay. Some of the stuff they did in Tears of the Kingdom can only be described as like a technical like miracle. I don't know how they got some of that stuff to run on the Switch. It's kind of crazy, actually.
Years and years of polishing. Like, I think that's where it comes down.
And the
down
power
to.
Of 30 FPS.
Because you compare that to, if you compare that to Pokemon, which didn't get a chance to have years and years of polishing, and is nowhere near as technically advanced.
And it never will.
It's such a real shame. But yeah, I don't know, Pete. I don't know that they will do the whole NX reveal this year. I think they're worried about cannibalizing holiday sales.
Well, that's the thing. So this if you do it at the Game Awards, it's already like you're pretty close.
Yeah,
you're knee deep in December already, right? Like, maybe you're right. Maybe though, maybe they just like hold it until a January or something like that. But I think that feels so low stakes because you're really only saying that to like the hardcore audience, you know? Like, yeah, people report on it or whatever, but like, is someone gonna, I don't know, is somebody who was gonna buy their kid a Switch for Christmas really gonna be like, oh no, I'll hold off now because 3 years from now Nintendo's gonna have a new console, maybe, right? Like, they don't
care. I think there's something to be said. I think there's something to be said from what Ken was saying, that you know, these multi-pack games won't run. And I think if your kid's like, oh, I really want to play Call of Duty with a friend, well, you can't play it on this on the current Switch, yeah. Or Elden Ring or anything like that, you know.
Elden Ring on the Switch.
Let me pull in a question here from one Andrew Valentine from the Discord, who wrote in a while ago. This is one we've been sitting on for a week where we had some time to dig in on it. And I think it's we're circling around it right now. So Andrew wrote in and said, since the NES, there has been one constant in the dialogue around Nintendo, that being that they need to release more powerful hardware. Another constant has been their ability to develop and release groundbreaking games on the relatively underpowered systems that prompt that debate. In Tears of the Kingdom, they've produced the likely game of the year and a game that is going to be spoken of as one of the greatest of all time on 10-year-old hardware. My question is, when will people stop saying with all the certainty and confidence that only the most hardened armchair critics can muster that Nintendo must release more powerful hardware to compete? And then they added, that is mostly rhetorical as people will never stop saying that, but it might be a worthwhile discussion. So
I think there's something to be said by the fact that even when you play Tears of the Kingdom, I'm sure you've experienced, Pete, the frame rate dips pretty frequently.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't, that I bet Nintendo don't want that to happen. No one wants that to happen in their game. I would imagine they would love all of their games to run at 60 frames per second. They had to make a concession for 3D World Bowser's Fury that it ran at 60 on docked mode, it ran at 30 in handheld, and that sucked. You know, they want the same experience across both. I think it comes to a point though, and I think Ken hit the nail on the head, that multi-platform's the problem. Third parties aren't going to continue to make concessions and use older versions of Unreal Engine that support the Switch, whereas Unreal Engine 5 won't. They're just not going to do it. And if you want to continue to have third party on your platform at quality games, you're going to need to upgrade your hardware at some point.
And I will say this too, right? I think that at the end of the day, the next Switch isn't going to be as powerful as a PS5 or the new Xbox, right? I don't think anyone will expect that. Doesn't need to be. But I think that once the hardware reaches the point where it starts to impede on Nintendo's creative visions with their first party games, that's when it kind of also starts to force the hand a little bit. The next Legend of Zelda game, because they already announced that the blueprint that was started in Breath of the Wild is kind of going to be like the standard going forward. They don't want it to run like at 30 frames per second. They want to blow people away with the next Zelda game. They're going to want to blow people away with the next Smash and things like that. And now that we're running on 10-year-old hardware, creativity and like development magic, for lack of a better phrase, can only go so far when your hardware is that old. And the other thing is, when you talked about the them announcing the NX before the Switch, saying like, hey, we have an announcement coming in a couple of months, that was also when the Wii U was the
one. No one was buying it.
So like, they kind of did that as like, you know, like, good point. Hey, like, our stock report's about to come out. Like, that's why they did it that
way. Yeah, new coming. Don't worry.
Don't worry about it. I promise it'd be great. But I would predict that we're not going to get a whole lot of news this year. We're going to have Pikmin 4, some DLC for like the different Nintendo games, maybe a few nice indie darlings coming out. And then probably around March, they'll have this big thing like, oh, the Switch 2 or the Switch Pro, whatever they want to call it. And then we'll start to get more and more news throughout a 6-month period of time, with like a massive launch in September leading into like the last quarter of the holiday season.
Maybe, 6 years old. I don't know, though, because like releasing it in Q1 was so successful for the Switch, because it got to have like, because think about it, right? You launch it in March, it is hot. And it was flying off shelves. Nobody could get it. It was like you had to be lucky to get your hands on it. By the time the holiday season rolled around, supply issues were figured out. They had at minimum 2, arguably like 3 to 5 marquee titles between Breath of the Wild, Odyssey, Splatoon, Mario Kart, and then, you know, take your pick on what the 5th one you think that is, right? The myriad of other games they had available. That was an extremely attractive Christmas gift that year, because it had already had the Game of the Year is on it, right? 2 of the Game of the Year contenders were on it. Everyone's talking about it. And now you can buy that sick Mario bundle.
So like, this is how they fix that, that issue, right? Like, if they make the next Nintendo console backwards compatible with the Switch games, and if certain Switch games run better on the new one, like,
yeah, that's the only way they do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Then that kind of release date starts to make sense. Like, when I bought the PS5, I got real lucky, got it on day one, right? And my logic at the time was, this is going to play the majority of my PS4 games, like 99% of them, so why not? I'm going to get one eventually. Yep. Anyway. And if they can kind of install that like logic with the Switch, it's print money.
I think that's how it's going to go. I mean, the rumors are it's going to utilize some of NVIDIA's technologies like DLSS 3. So if it does do that, I think we could easily see, even if it's like, they could even use some of the frame generation stuff that's in DLSS 3 and potentially improve frame rates that way, and as well as improving resolution. I think they want to get a minimum of 1080p output from this console. And most of the time, it's never, ever hit that in terms of native resolution coming out of the games. I think Tears of the Kingdom runs at like 900p at max, from what I've read, and it dips pretty frequently. It's like a dynamic resolution.
Yeah, so to take it back to Andrew's question, I think there's a couple things I want to address here, because I think the conversation about like the constant dialogue with power, I think that's kind of revisionist history. That's more a modern Nintendo issue. When you talk about like their earlier consoles, like the N64 was actually, I think, arguably the more powerful console, right? It didn't have loading or anything like that. Granted, it also couldn't really use textures the way that the PlayStation could, but
Europe for like ages. Like, that was a massive problem for them, that they just missed a market.
So, you know, I definitely think it's fair to say that about modern Nintendo, right? Like, from the GameCube on, I think that's,
I would say Wii on, because the GameCube, I think, was more powerful than the PS2, wasn't it?
I don't think it was, but there were certain things it did bet. Like, it did dynamic lighting extremely well. Like, you look at the lighting in like Luigi's Mansion, and it's better than like any other game from that generation. But, you know, it's like, it gets arguable, but I think you're definitely right with the Wii, right? The Wii was decidedly less powerful than its 2 competitors there. And I think that's the thing, right? Like, I don't think that the conversation is they need to have more powerful hardware to compete. And I'm not saying that people don't say that. You're right, they do. I don't think that's it. I think it's that the Switch has outlived its usefulness hardware-wise. And what I mean by that is, when you look at, I think anyway, right? Generally, the end of a generation, you look at whomever are the studios that make exclusive content for that console, and they're eking out the absolute max of what that console can do in terms of really making it sing, right? You look at like the difference between what Breath of the Wild looks like and what Tears of the Kingdom looks like. And there's a clear jump in quality, you know, from lighting to, you know, character models to, you know, just like every little thing, the quality of the animation, right? Like the world feels way more detailed and vivid and alive. And I think that that speaks to the fact that they had, you know, as you said, right, nearly a decade to get intimate with the system and to know its ins and outs and to know how to get the maximum result out of it. You saw that on the PlayStation 4, right, at the end of that life cycle with how great The Last of Us Part 2 and like Ghost of Tsushima looked, you know, and that I think we've hit that with Tears of the Kingdom. And I don't think there's going to be another game that gets more out of it. And I think at this point, the new stuff is, you know, you run into the Pokemon situation where it's like, what if you don't have 6-7 years to work on this game and a really intimate knowledge of the software or of the hardware and like, you don't want to depend on having some of the greatest development teams in the entire world to not show the age of your hardware. And I think the problem where we're at, where it's like, yes, Tears of the Kingdom is, I think, the game of the year. I think it is the best game that's come out this year. I think by the end of the year, it will still probably be the best game that came out this year. That said,
it also took them almost 7 years to make, right? Like, it took a long time.
I don't think they can make something better than that on the Switch hardware. And that's where they're at. So to me, that's the sign that it's time to move on. Not that, you know, the myriad of other things, right? Right. I want the quality of life updates. I want an experience that is a little elevated, that maybe has some of the quality of life stuff that I've come to enjoy on the other new gen consoles, yada, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the games. The software is what's important. And the Switch games are still good. However, there have been really great games that have been limited by the hardware. And I look at Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which is a game I was really enjoying. Playing it in handheld, I thought was a really, really substandard, subpar experience because it's hitting 540p. And I just don't want to do that anymore. Like, call me spoiled, call me whatever, but like, I think we're past that. And I think we've gotten 7 years and so many modern classics on the Switch. I think it's just time. I think it's time for the next thing.
No, hit it right on the head there. It's like you said, a little spoiled. I'm playing games in 4K, 60 frames per second, and I don't need my Switch to do that. But when you compare that to like 540p,
I'd like it to hit the native resolution of the panel. You know, 720p is what that panel can output. And I think if you can hit that, then great. And I don't think 720p, 30 frames per second is that big of an ask. You know, that's what the Steam Deck's targeting. And I feel like with the partnership with NVIDIA and the teams that Nintendo has, I think they could easily accomplish that. And I don't think we need a panel that's any sharper than 720p. I think it looks absolutely fine when you're hitting that resolution. But you're right, Pete, when it's like, it gets to a point where it's all muddy and mushy. I remember playing The Witcher 3 on Switch, and I was just like,
oh my God, what the hell? You know, like come on, why is this even here? Why is this even on this console? Yeah. And you know, you mentioned the third party thing. That's such an interesting one because it's like, I feel like Nintendo's relationship with third parties has become so deteriorated at this point where like, if they're not making a game that's for the Switch, it's not coming to the Switch anyway. And like, I don't know that I care about that. I think I'm past the point of being like, I need, you know, the games I was gonna play on PlayStation or Xbox, I'm never gonna play them on Nintendo.
No, but I do think the mainstream gamer does care about that. You know, if Minecraft Legends didn't come to the Switch, I think people would have been a bit concerned about that.
That's a little different title. Though. I'm more talking about like the Elden Rings and
yeah, those kind of games I can see.
But, and the FIFAs but, you know, of the world.
But we've not once got a FIFA that's on par with the other consoles. Right, they just keep outputting the same old version and just changing the names on the people.
I don't think Switch needs that, is my point. Is like, mm-hmm. I don't think this is a point that Ken made before, right? Is like, I don't think that the Switch 2, we'll call it, needs to live up to the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox Series X. I think it just needs to be more powerful than the Switch. I think that's the bar. Like, I want to raise the bar to the same, at least the same level of parity that we saw with the Switch and the last gen consoles when it came out, right? Where like, yeah, maybe it's like 25% less powerful than those other devices or whatever, 30% less power than the, fine, whatever. That's cool. That's still a lot better than tech that was old when it was new.
I'd really like it to be able to play the games I can play on my Steam Deck. And those aren't necessarily the latest and greatest titles, but I'm talking
except
about
when they are.
I'm talking about stuff from last gen though, like Far Cry 6 that plays fantastically. And the, you know, stuff like The Last of Us. I can play it, but I'm playing
it on
low.
Think of how good Elden Ring is on
Steam
Deck.
Elden Ring's fantastic.
Nuts.
Yeah.
I can't believe
that's a last gen title. You know, I'm not playing Returnal on here. I'm probably not going to be playing Ratchet and Clank on my Steam Deck.
Right.
I can, but it's not the best experience, and I'm going to have to make a lot of concessions, and I don't necessarily want to do that. I think, though, if the next Switch can come out and sell 100 million again, I think someone like Insomniac, not Insomniac, obviously, but I think someone like them would put the effort in to optimize it and make it work well on that hardware, in the same way that we saw with other games and the other impossible ports like Doom, for example. It was worth their time in doing that. But as time has progressed, it's kind of diminishing returns. You know, do you put that amount of development effort in to make a version that's specific for the Switch? Or do you just kind of cut your losses and be like, well, we tried. It's not worth doing it now. We'll wait for the next one. And I think that's where a lot of third-party developers are at.
Yeah, I think you're right. Man, the fact that Doom runs, that there is a version of Doom that runs on Switch is insane. It really speaks to how good it is at development.
Yeah, but then we got to a point where it was, ah, fuck it, let's just play it on the cloud. You know, that was the solution for Resident Evil. That's the solution for Hitman. That's the solution for Control. And it's a terrible solution because the Switch is a portable console and I want to take it anywhere with me. And those games I can't play when I'm outside of my house.
It literally defeats the whole purpose of the console. Like,
yeah,
quite frankly,
you're also paying a premium for the worst version of the game, right? Like, it's like, how would you like to pay the same amount of money for an inferior version of the product that you can only play sometimes? Terrible. It's like, why would you ever do that, right? Like, you'd be better off buying a second console. So I want to close things out on this last question. This one comes from Left Eye Lazy from the Discord, who wrote in and said, are you guys bored with everything needing to look and feel AAA? As I play more Zelda and I watch these presentations, I feel like Nintendo and mobile are the only ones really innovating style of play. You know, I don't agree.
Me neither.
I think the idea of... I see a lot of that. I see a lot of folks who are like disillusioned with AAA gaming. I go back and forth on it because I think part of it is... I think it's a multifaceted issue because I think for what it's worth, I like AAA games. And I also think that I like video games more than the average person. And I don't mean that in any kind of like derisive way. It's that I think I have generally a wider palette and enjoy a wider array of video games than most people seem to. So I grain of salt for my opinion on it is why I bring that up. Right. That said, I mean, Zelda is a AAA game, right? And
like, yeah.
And it's an extremely innovative, exciting, creative video game. We just watched a 45-minute direct on Starfield last week. That's a AAA game. I think that game looks incredibly innovative and interesting and deep and something that I want to engage with. And I feel like as games get more mainstream and there are just so many more of them, when you're watching these presentations, you are going to see 4 or 5 or 6 AAA games that look samey, that you might never play, that might not speak to you, but they speak to somebody, ideally. And I think that's the thing, is that the market has just gotten so big, and we, as you know, our generation of gamers, right, folks who are like in their 30s or whatever, when we were growing up, you know, or for folks older than us, there was only a few games that came out a year, right? And like, you kind of could play everything. There was that sense of like, I'm going to try a little bit of everything that comes out. And I think at this point, you have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to high quality options for games. And I can definitely see looking at some of these things and being like, I've seen this before, I've seen that before. Maybe you're just tired of that flavor. It's time to look for another flavor, you know? And granted, I think indies have a ton of innovation, and there is so much going on in the indie space that's exciting and dynamic and interesting, and that's always an easy way to go and get something different. But I think you see a lot of the same patterns in indie games, right? We've talked so much about how many more farming sims are we going to see? How many more, you know, like we talked about multiple games from the Wholesome Direct and some of the other ones that had like the same concept, but slightly different.
Yeah,
right?
It was like memories and windows and things like they came around.
Yeah.
How many roguelikes did we get in the past year? Like,
right, exactly. Or Metroidvanias in the last 10 years, right? Games and art in general is made up of trends. And sometimes you're going to be in a wave where what's trendy does not speak to you. And I definitely get when you're in one of those waves.
We felt that last year, right? It was like everything's sci-fi horror. We were sick of it. And that was the whole thing. But then you go and you watch Days of Play and Day of the Devs. You go watch Day of the Devs and everything's completely different. And there is that level of innovation. I think what people forget is that AAA used to be a level of risk, used to mean a level of risk. It came from like Moody's and credit. And it was a AAA game is not very risky. So we're willing to invest money in it because we know it's going to sell. I think Ubisoft really pigeonholed themselves in that. Every single game they were putting out was the same. It was, we're going to check boxes, it's going to be an open world, and it's going to be basically the same game with a different lick of paint all the time.
And then it was like, now we're doing all live service games, you know?
But I do think there is innovation all over the place. I think Nintendo probably is one of the most innovative publishers. They are willing to take more risks than others. But I do think Sony is too. I don't think Spider-Man looks the same as Ghost of Tsushima. It doesn't look the same as, The Last of Us. The Last of Us Part 2, I think, was a big risk.
I think that game is very risky.
It's a very long game.
I think even God of War, right? You look at God of War 2018 and then Ragnarok, taking what was the fucking poster child of like hyper-masculine Mountain Dew Dorito gamer fuel energy from the 2000s and be like, okay, and now we're going to reinvent this character as a sensitive dad. That
God
was a risk.
Dad.
That was a creative risk. And it was one that played out and paid off, but it was certainly a risk. And again, you talk about AAA. What was the game of the year last year? It was Elden Ring. I mean, I don't like them, but I think you can't argue that From Software doesn't take creative risks. They invented a whole new genre that's gone on to define a whole bunch of the sector of AAA games.
And then they took that genre and they were like, we're going to make it open world. It was a massive risk. This was the first time they'd ever done it. No one knew if they could pull it off.
Yeah.
Because they'd always been linear games previously and they absolutely smashed it out of the park.
But, you know, it's interesting though, right? When you talk about innovating style of play, I hear that too. And I think that's part of the age of video games as an art form and a medium growing up a little bit, right? Is that like, you know, yeah, I mean, we're not necessarily in the golden age of experimentation for video games anymore because they've been around for a long time and there are a lot of established genres and tropes and, you know, styles of play, as you put it, that people really resonate with and they want more of it, right? I want an open world action game. I want a story driven indie title. I want this, you know, I want a looter shooter, right? Like we have those archetypes and as they get more defined, you see more people chase trends. And we're heading into a recession, which is going to make those companies more risk averse. So you're going to get more sequels and more remakes and more let's do this safe thing that seems like a surefire bet. And I know that can get exhausting. So like, it's not to say that I don't see where you're coming
from.
Look
at some of the giant risks, though. Like PSVR 2, that was a massive risk. Absolutely massive, massive risk. And those the kind of games
that
are there.
Out? Because I haven't heard much about it.
Oh, it's not going well, Ken.
Yeah, it's really not going well. VR in general is not going well.
That's one of the
interesting
things.
Yeah, no, VR is a struggle.
I don't know if I would, like, is that a risk? I feel like it was a risk in hindsight. I feel like when they decided they were going to do it, it seemed like a good idea. And
you could be right, because the Quest 2 was like, it's high, and it's like, oh, yeah.
And the original PSVR was hugely successful,
yeah.
Right? They were like, yeah, great. We'll
the PSVR 1 was a risk. I don't know. I think in terms of visual style, though, I can kind of agree with Left Eye Lazy in that a lot of games do go for the hyper-realism. And they want to go for that.
I'm
that
with you there.
Yeah.
We've mo-capped everything. Your face looks like it's in the game.
Have you seen that meme? It's the Sonic Says thing from the old Sonic cartoons from the 90s. And it's like, I want games to look worse and and like it's basically I want them to cost more and look worse so that like the idea that like let developers spend less time working on games. We don't constantly need to be focused on graphics. And I take it back to Andrew Valentine's question. Look at Tears of the Kingdom, right? Tears of the Kingdom is not a 4K 60 FPS locked experience. It's still fantastic. And
that's because of the art style. I think when the art style's right, like someone like Wind Waker, it's timeless. When it's not, I think it becomes something like Skyward Sword, where you look back at it and you're like, ugh, really? That's an ugly looking game. And so, it could still be a real masterpiece, but you look at it and it visually isn't impressive. It can still innovate in terms of style of play. But I think for me, it very much comes down to art direction a lot of the time.
Yeah, art direction and style will carry a game for decades. Like, you look back at Okami on the PS2, like, resolution aside, that game still looks beautiful.
Yeah.
You compare that with a other, like, hyper-realistic games that were on the PS2, they age like crap. And I think that in the sense of everything needing to look and feel AAA, even from a gameplay perspective, they do things completely original, never before done, huge risks. They do it in like a glow that is very appealing to the masses, you know? There are a ton of games out there that take creative risks from a gameplay perspective and a stylist perspective. Sometimes it works out very well. Like, I think the newest game, what's it called? Humanity. You can actually get on PSN right now. Really visually stunning, really creative gameplay, things like that. That really worked out. And then other times, people try to do creative gameplay with unique art styles, and it doesn't, like the last case of Benedict Fox. did not enjoy that one. But the main thing is, when it comes to these bigger companies, they'll take creative risks, but they'll try to do it in a way that is still very easily marketable. And I think that when you look at things at a glance and you don't look a couple of levels deeper, that's when you kind of miss a certain degree of value. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, even with Tears of the Kingdom, right? It's the sequel to Breath of the Wild. Can you imagine if they'd have put all of this extra stuff in, but they'd thrown out that visual style that we came accustomed to with Breath of the Wild and was like, we're going to go in from scratch and make it look completely different again like they usually do. I feel like people would have been a bit more like, oh, okay, like this is a bit more of a risk. But at first glance, it's a sequel to one of the best-selling games of all time, the best-selling Zelda game of all time, a truly beloved game. So you're going to buy it anyway because you're really excited about it. So they can make some more risks there. They can be more innovative.
And I think that's the bigger thing, right? Is like in some of the examples we've brought up, three of the ones we just brought up come to mind to me, right? It's like, how do you take risks in a way that is safe, right? Where it's like, okay, framing a very weird, inventive, creative game in Tears of the Kingdom as the sequel to the most successful game in this franchise up to this date, right? You're kind of backdooring the weirdness in through a safe thing. God of War, same thing. How do we take a established franchise, bring it back from the dead, and modernize it? Well, I mean, the IP having name recognition and, you know, there being like you have something in mind in terms of what that means for an action game. That was your safe inroad. Now let's subvert your expectations and do something that's maybe story-wise creatively risky. Same thing in Last of Us Part 2, right? Spoilers for the Last of Us Part 2. I'm not going to go anything too crazy. Here's your chance to get out. But you think about how the main character in that game, right, being Ellie, and how the relationship you have with that character in the first game and how they take all of the emotional attachment and journey that you went through and then use that against you in the second one, right? To, again, right, in the safety of this already established franchise, sequel to one of the most popular games of all time, they upended everything. They did a ton of things that were weird and risky and crazy. And
you played as a character that people didn't want to play, right? People would just say, I don't want to play as Abby. What's going on? Who's this? Who's this completely new character?
Wait, that reminds me of Metal Gear Solid 2 when they, after the first level, you just stop playing as Snake. I feel like that's like the first big time I noticed that happened.
It's like, here, you're Nier Raiden. It's like, what? Like, that's nuts. That's a nuts decision. So it's like, I don't know. When it comes to look, I get what you're saying, where it's like, I like pretty games as much as the next person, but a game being pretty is not nearly as important as it playing well or being fun or being creative. And I generally think that that shows in sales. I think games that are just good looking do not stand the test of time. Games that are like the only goal is to look and feel AAA, they don't rise to the top the way that the Tears of the Kingdoms and the Elden Rings and the whatever whatevers do.
Yeah, I don't think Elden Ring is a visually great looking game.
No.
That's not the reason I was attracted to it. It wasn't like, wow, this is the most beautiful game this year, because it wasn't. Yeah, I think something like God of War did look more visually impressive than Elden Ring.
And
but
even that
wasn't the reason people were drawn to Elden Ring.
I think you could argue that Sony banking on making highly cinematic game, like AAA third person action, like that's kind of a risk. That's not a thing that anyone else can really do safely anymore. There are a small number of companies that can make games like that successfully and sell them and have that be profitable.
And in a world of microtransactions and things like that, and you know, season passes and
yeah.
Where they're trying to like,
but that, I mean, they're big getting the into that though. Money.
They sure
and
are.
That's their next big play. It's like, oh, everything's gonna be live service, so expect a lot more of those from Sony.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think I get where you're coming from, for sure, Matt. But I think for me, like, I am just so excited by the state of the video game industry broadly, because I just think it's like such a good time to be a player. There's more diversity of choice than there's ever been in the entire history of the medium in terms of what you want to play, where you want to play it, and what kind of genres you care about, right? Like, there were so long where if you didn't like combat and games, there were no games for you, right? And now it's like we have entire showcases dedicated to games that mostly have no combat, right? Or like that, or that don't have a AAA feel, that don't have that grim, gray, brown, whatever, right? Like, that go for something different, that speak to totally different audiences, that try to say something different, that explore these different ways of telling stories or exploring gameplay. And I feel like right now is actually probably one of the most exciting times innovation-wise. And when I say now, I mean like the last, you know, decade and change, right? We've seen so much growth in that space and seen so many of those like indie teams now become publishers or now become AA studios and get to try new types of things and you know, keep things moving. So yeah, I think what we need you to do, Left Eye Lazy, is to write in and let us make some recommendations. I think we got to recommend you some new games. I think that's where you're at.
Recommendation number one, Persona 5.
I don't think he's ever played it, and I think he would love that game if he got it.
I mean, he'd never played Breath of the Wild, and he got massively into it.
He did not like Breath of the Wild, yeah. And then
no, it's like, I don't know. He's a real quandary.
You want something that doesn't look AAA? You want something that has style?
Persona 5.
Maybe it's on the Switch now.
I think it's because Mario Kart. Has he bought Mario Kart yet?
I know. I don't think he has. Unless he bought it after the Mario movie, because I think he said he was gonna. He's a wild card, man. He goes on vibes, and I respect that. At the end of the day, you gotta just feel it out, right? And I think, unfortunately, video games are expensive to try, but you gotta try a lot of fucking games, you know?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I love Game Pass.
I was about to say, unless you got Game Pass.
Yeah. The power of Game Pass. You could try every bad game ever made, and then you'll know what you like. Go for it.
Oh, is that E.T. game on there now?
I wish.
Well, Gollum, is that Gollum game on there? That's the real dud this year, isn't it? I really want to try that.
I was thinking about getting that game and trying to get the plat as a joke. And then I saw it was $60, and I immediately shut that down. I said, no, sir.
$60 joke, not quite worth it. Anyway, thank you all for joining us here on another episode of Nintendo Noise. Ken, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast. Good times. Good times.
We'll have to do it again soon. Sure. So real quick, let the folks know where they can find you on the internet.
Oh, you're talking to me. You can find me at KetchaKen on Instagram and Twitter.
We'll have a link to that down below, of course. So everybody go give Ken a follow, show him some love. And we'll have to have you back on for another one of these soon. So Remember, if you want to write in just like Andrew Valentine and Left Eye Lazy did, there's a bunch of ways you can get in touch. Head over to flipscreen.games. That's our website where you can find links to our email address, our Discord, where you can keep the conversation rolling between episodes, our sister shows, the Steam Deck podcast and the Flipscreen Games podcast, where we've got a ton of Summer Game Fest conversations out for you this past week, and a bunch of other good content. You know, maybe you want to. You're over here on the Nintendo side of things. Maybe you're thinking about new hardware. Maybe you want to get a Steam Deck. Go listen to the Steam Deck podcast and get that elevator pitch, because I'll tell you what, Steve and I will evangelize it for you.
Yeah, so, Chewy, go listen to the Steam Deck podcast, because you keep asking us questions, but go listen to the Steam Deck podcast, Chewy. I'm talking directly to you, the one person.
This guy out here sending me DMs. How do I put the dolphin thing? Yo, go watch our tutorial, brother, all right? We made the video. It's out there, all right? So yeah, you don't worry about it. We got lots of good content for you. Whatever your needs are, we're out here doing it for you. So flipscreen.games, that's the website. However you choose to get involved, thank you for listening. Thank you for being a member of the community. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Nintendo Noise. For the crew, I've been Pete. He's been Steve. He's been Ken. We'll see you next week.